Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Week with Joel, Kim and Chris. On today's Tour Catch-Up,
Świątek secures her first Madrid trophy in epic final.
Rublev racks up his second 1000s title.
And Rafael Nadal plays in the Caja Mágica for one final time.
Kim, Chris, today is the 6th of May and we are here to catch up on the week in tennis at Tennis Weekly HQ. Iga Świątek and Andrei Rublev are your 2024 Madrid champions after 2 weeks of action that left us with an instant classic of a final on the women's side and one of the most unpredictable semi-final lineups in a big tournament in a long, long time on the men's side. Injuries, withdrawals and a Rafa send-off, Madrid really was a bit of everything, wasn't it?
And it's finally ended. We can all breathe a sigh of relief.
It's like that Titanic meme where it's like, it's been 84 years. And I was just thinking that all the time with Madrid. When will it stop? When will it end?
It does feel a bit like it's been a very, very long and not very quick walk, doesn't it, Kim?
Yes, I did a long walk today, come to think of it, Chris. Nice segue
there.
Yeah, I walked all the way through London, 19 miles worth. So just think how many of those walks I could have fitted into
some of the matches
tournament.
Felt like 19 miles worth of matches.
I could have walked 500 miles and maybe 500 more.
And we still wouldn't have finished round one, I feel, of the tournament.
The doubles hasn't started still.
Yeah, but there have been some nice moments over the last week, haven't there, that we've been enjoying. Joel, I'm going to come to you first. What's caught your eye this week?
Well, I saw this on social media and everyone's favourite fan club on tour, the Carotta Boys, who are famous for being the fan group of Jannik Sinner, they have announced on social media that they are going to be releasing a book.
Right.
Yeah, they're going to be releasing a book and the translation from Italian to English is Carrot Boys, Orange Dream, Six Friends, and a crazy love for Jannik Sinner. I just had to share this with everyone because I'm not on their payroll, don't worry. But I was like, a fan group with their own book? Is that a thing? I did not realise that.
I guess they're looking to try and monetize it further. I mean, they've got several deals. They're official Lavazza sponsored individuals. But I do think that I guess when there's six of you, you've got to split the income six ways. So maybe this is what they need the book for. But I mean, would you read it? I'm not sure that there'd be that much to unpack.
I feel like it needs to be a picture book of them in their carrot outfits all around the globe.
A children's book could be quite sweet, couldn't it? If it was a kid's book about the carrots who support
us. Pop up Carotta Boys on the page.
Well, we can put that maybe their second book.
It's good promo for healthy eating. You know, eat lots of carrots, have great eyesight.
There
be
should
like
be
Jannik
five
Sinner.
Of them for the five a day, shouldn't there, rather than six?
I know. I think Orange Dream reminds me of one of those orange chocolates you get in like the Cadbury's Roses.
It doesn't sound like a carrot, does it?
No, but yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to be purchasing this book, but maybe I would purchase branded, I don't know, carrot cake or something along those lines. I'm not
Jannik
sure
Sinner if they're going to... Would he be on the front or would it be the Carotta Boys you bought on the cake?
Oh, I'm not sure. I did see a Jannik Sinner lookalike in Hertfordshire on the weekend, though.
Official.
And it was, yeah, uncanny. He'd, like, done his hair exactly like Jannik Sinner's. And I wondered if he was actually modelling his hair on Jannik Sinner because he looked quite sporty and around that sort of age where he might follow Jannik Sinner.
Well, he did go out of Madrid earlier than expected, so maybe popped over to Hertfordshire.
Possibly. But yes, I mean, we won't be seeing Yannick Sinner, will we, in Rome, sadly. We'll get onto that later. But Chris, do you have a favourite moment from the last week on tour?
Well, it's been a long week, I have to say. So I'm actually looking to the future. I know that's not what we normally do. We do the highlight from the last week. But my highlight happened today when the Rome draw was quite spectacular. It was at the Trevi Fountain and they'd kind of taken over the whole of the front of it and they put Trophy was in centre stage. Svitolina and Holger Rune turned up. They flipped a coin, made a wish. I hope that they wished, and not to ruin their chance of the wish coming true, but I hope they wished to win the title. But I was thinking, it looks wonderful, but imagine if you're one of those tourists that turns up and you're thinking, what is going on here? Because you can't get anywhere near the fountain for you to have a go at putting your coin in. So I thought it looked wonderful, but maybe very confusing to tourists.
If maybe I was a tourist, I'd just be shouting at them, just release the PDF online. We don't need the spectacle in the event. Just release it online.
Just drop it earlier, ideally the Sunday. It would be easier for recording, right?
You're ruining, you know, like 1,000 tourist photographs.
All the photos, yeah. Goodness.
Yeah, well, when I went, it was all scaffolded up with like a fake montage because I think they were restoring it. So I didn't get to see it either. So I can sympathise with those tourists. but my moment that I've enjoyed the past week, it was actually from, yeah, well, just over a week ago, but it was the good news that Rafa's foundation won the Sport for Good Award at the Laureus Awards. And I really enjoyed seeing the photos of Rafa all dressed up with his mum and his wife, who is the director of the foundation, at the Laureus Awards. And I thought it was just a nice moment for all of them, as well as seeing him in Madrid. I enjoyed looking at all those photographs and seeing all the pictures coming out of the awards ceremony, because we love seeing everyone getting dressed up, don't we? It's a nice change from seeing them sweating on a tennis court. And also, you know, I may just be having a few Rafa highlights in the next few months, because after he's finished, I won't be having many more, will I? So I'm going to do them while I can. There we go.
Absolutely. And a lot of people went there. Muguruza was there. She's kind of making the most of this retirement news. I quite like seeing her doing the press. She's at the...
She's trying to get everyone signed up to Zumba classes.
Maybe she is, but she's not really promoting anything. I think when she was asked again at the desk, I think it was for the Tennis Channel or one of the broadcasters, she was just saying how great it is not to be playing tennis, basically. So maybe Rafa, when he finally gives up, he can be as happy as Muguruza.
Well, they've moving on to pastures new. And let's move on to the Madrid tournament, because a bit of a tale of two halves, perhaps. Let's start with the women, where I think the real highlight of the action was found. We had a sensational final between Iga Świątek and Aryna Sabalenka. It went the distance. Match points were saved, but it did end in world number one Iga Świątek winning the Madrid title. She's now got a clean sweep of all the clay court masters, I believe. But she came through against Sabalenka 7-5, 4-6, 7-6 to win Madrid. Tick that one off from her trophy cabinet tick list. And this is her ninth 1,000 title. I think she's become the youngest player to reach 20 titles on the tour since Wozniacki back in 2012. And it's already her third title of the season. So her season is continuing in good fashion, especially coming up to the French Open. Chris, what did you make of Iga Świątek and especially that final, which was really, really a cracking match?
Yeah, it was a fantastic match. And I think maybe the days of Iga kind of blowing people away in finals are behind us, because we've had an absolutely fantastic French Open final last year. We had this absolute epic, and obviously one of our most favourite tournaments, the Ostrava final with Krejcikova a couple of years ago, was also very epic. I think that featured a tiebreak as well. So I think it's great to see that finals are no longer particularly one-sided. I think we've had a lot of matches for Iga generally, which do tend to be very straightforward. So it's always great when you see someone who's as talented as Iga being tested. And we see someone like Sabalenka, who's playing some of the best tennis as well for her, having kind of dropped off a little bit since kind of the Australian Open, hasn't quite got the clay court season started until this tournament. So I think it's a great spectacle for women's tennis. The semi-final with Rebecca Kinner also gets a very big mention here, because we were really treated to some unbelievable women's tennis. And I think it has kind of lit up the Madrid Open in many ways. This final, I think it's got over 600,000 views on YouTube in a day, which is a bit better than what we do here on the podcast. So people are
only just though. Only just though. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. A similar spectacle. But I've absolutely loved it. And I think the last sort of few days of the women's side have kind of made up for what has been a very lengthy tournament overall.
Because Iga Świątek, there's a really interesting stat. She hasn't lost a match on clay from a set up since 2019. That's 5 years. But Sabalenka did come close, because Sabalenka had 3 match points. Joel, what was it that stopped Sabalenka getting over that finish line? She came ever so close.
Yeah, and it was absolute fine margins towards the end in that tiebreak. Perhaps Sabalenka was going for it just a little bit too much. I mean, she went long with that backhand error to give Świątek the victory, but I couldn't really split them. And I think, you know, when it comes to Świątek and just her mental prowess, I think it was all on display in that third set, because, you know, Sabalenka was, 3-1 up, had a break, and it looked like she was careering towards the victory. But you just see with Świątek, despite, you know, how young she is, she's just so experienced in finals that what you see, I think, with true champions is that they find a way to win. And with Świątek, I think now she's 20-4 in finals, and it's just impressive to see her think on the court, not get intimidated by the situation, by Sabalenka across the net screaming after winners. She just came cool, calm and collected. And when it got to the big points at the very end in that tiebreak, she was ultimately stronger. But it was not by much.
Do you think that potentially Sabalenka's still probably her biggest weakness is the mental side of the game? Because she does get in these situations sometimes where she might be playing the better tennis, but she doesn't come away with the win. We saw that as a real theme last year. You look at her performances, a final in Madrid is a great result, but having match points, being up, is she slightly more temperamental than maybe a Rybakina might be, or an Iga, who seems to be rock solid mentally?
She's certainly not an ice queen, is she?
No.
I mean, if you look at Sabalenka's route to the final, it was pretty scratchy. You know, earlier on, you know, she dropped a set to Lynette. She dropped a set to Montgomery as well.
Collins should have taken her out. Collins had points to go a set and a break up and missed a sitter. So, I mean, that actually might argue slightly differently that she did very well to stay mentally tough there. But what were you going to say, Joel?
But also in the you know, the semi-final, again, maybe you could make the same argument, because she dropped that first set, you know, 6-1 to Rybakina. But I still think, yeah, maybe there's an argument the other way to say that, yeah, she is a little bit too temperamental, and you just can't give that advantage to someone like Świątek, who might be thinking, Sabalenka's across the court, I'm always going to get a chance, and it's up to me to make the most of it.
Is it harder to put away a player like Iga, because you know that she's never going to go away? You have to keep pushing. She's not going to give you the win. And do you think that did mean that maybe she did go for a bit too much at times?
Yeah, I think she made Świątek really, really earn it. And, you know, she did ask all the right questions, but Świątek ultimately came up, I think, with all the right answers. So certainly she got there, but
Pipped at the post.
And as I say, Świątek, she's the world number one for a reason, and she showed it in the Madrid final.
We had 3 of the top 4 seeds in the semi-finals. Coco Gauff was the only one that didn't get there, but she was beaten by Madison Keys, who reached the semis. But do you think we are getting like a really consistent big three now, with, you know, Świątek, Sabalenka, Rybakina? I feel like we're getting more consistency than we are actually on the men's side, with these players when they're at the top of their game reaching the latter stages. Can we call them that? I know we've had this conversation a bit before, but are we more entitled to have it now, with especially what we've seen here?
There are definitely some standout players this year. I think I probably would put Danielle Collins in the mix there as well. I think she's playing like she's got nothing to lose and really wants to go out in a really, you know, a big way. And I think that the way that she tested Sabalenka really does show that she's right in the mix when it comes to these sorts of results on a surface that hasn't always been her favourite. So towards the end of the year, I think there will be great opportunities for her. But ultimately, I think these are the three players who are most likely right now to progress to the latter stages of tournaments consistently. And the only person that I think I'm a bit surprised we're not talking about more is Coco Gauff, coming off that US Open win. And clay has traditionally been one of her favourite surfaces, and the surface that she made her first Grand Slam final in, and a surface where she made her first Grand Slam quarterfinal in. She was hitting a lot of double faults, making a lot of mistakes, and you have to kind of question what is it that's brought her kind of out of the mix when we are talking about the big three. Why are we not saying big four? She's a Grand Slam champion. And do we think she's falling a little bit into the Vondrousova category at this point?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I was looking at some of the stats of Coco Gauff against Madison Keys, and particularly her first serve, it's not as strong as it needs to be in order to be in this conversation of a big four, for example. I mean, she served 13 double faults, 52% first serves in. So that is certainly something that she needs to work on. And, you know, I don't have a doubt that she can put herself in the conversation and get herself up there in terms of potentially a big four, sort of maybe like Andy Murray did in terms of kind of forcing that conversation. But it certainly feels at the moment that we do have a big three, as it were. They've played each other. They've all played, I think, each other across the season so far. And I think what's so exciting is that I just get this vibe that everyone can beat everyone. And we don't have to hang our hat, I think, on just one rivalry. I think that's what's so exciting. Yes, we got a fantastic matchup between Świątek and Sabalenka today. But we could just easily be talking about, you know, the Sabalenka-Rybakina rivalry, given the semi-final that they had. Or even the Świątek-Rybakina rivalry, because it feels like Rybakina might actually have Świątek's number at the moment. So it feels very, very exciting times on the tour. And it's going to feel, I think, very, very competitive. And yeah, very, very consistent, potentially, when we get to the latter end, the latter stages of the big tournaments.
Well, last week we were talking about challengers and the dynamic of those trio. And it feels like there's another dynamic of who's going to come out on top, who's going to be the winner. And none of us were 100% sure last time. And it feels like anything can happen this time as well.
Oh, I'm thinking now that there's something subliminal and subversive going on underneath or behind the scenes now, you said, about the Challengers film. I hope not. But what do you make of Madison Keys, though? Because obviously, great result for her getting to the semi-final. We've seen her throwing in kind of flashes of brilliance over the years. Like when she really plays her game, like, she can beat anyone. But do you think this is kind of one of those moments where she's just had a really good week? Or do you think she can build on this and perhaps be a bit of an outside threat for the French?
She's always dangerous. She did start her season later because she's coming back from an injury. So the first match she actually played this year was in March, I believe, at Indian Wells. So I think it just took her a little bit of time to get herself fully back into form. She had a few kind of decent results here and there, but this is the first real big result that she's had. And I mean, coming back from, you know, being bageled by Ons Jabeur, I think that's very impressive, because you do think that Madison Keys tends to be very on or very off. And it looks like at the start, maybe she was not going to have one of those good days, but she was able to turn it around. So if Madison Keys is able to keep a steady head and keep the ball within the court, I think she's very dangerous, because she has such a great skill set. But I mean, I was surprised by her semi-final result, because a lot of people thought that maybe Madison Keys could spring an upset in the conditions in Madrid on Iga Świątek, because of the big serve. It does favour the people who do like to hit big and don't want to play the long rallies. But I mean, she didn't really have a look in on serve, which was quite surprising, really. She only had 3 break points, didn't take any of them, and won a very low percentage of those points against Iga's second serve. So did she psych herself out for it, or is Iga just that good?
I'd still put her in that category of as like a Karolina Pliskova, in terms of like she's going to have one or two really good tournaments, you know, across the season. We know her ability, and we know when she's at her best, I think she can, you know, be right up there. But she still, I think, struggles for consistency. But she should be doing well, I think, in these sorts of conditions with the power game that she has. And yeah, hoping she can bring it on, because I think at the start of the season, we were sort of talking about, you know, new blood in the American camp, like someone like an Emma Navarro, and, you know, Madison Keys not so much in the picture. So yeah, it's exciting to see her sort of come back and announce herself after 2 months off the tour at the beginning of the year.
Well, we've had a great WTA event in Madrid, I think. That's definitely kind of outshone, I would say, the ATP side of events. A fantastic final to finish it off. And that's kind of come in light of some comments by Ons Jabeur that were made in the week. She did say that, you know, definitely, I'm going to quote her here, definitely tennis is a sport that I'm proud to play in as a woman, but I feel we have a long way, especially here in Madrid and in Rome, in Europe in general, a long way to go. I feel like they need to respect women more and they need to respect how we are playing. I think that's quite appropriate, those comments, given that in Madrid we've had some controversial decisions.
Has she got Kate Gate in her mind from last year?
I think so. She's clearly still remembering that. And I think it's kind of a nice outcome, therefore, that the women's tennis has really set this tournament alight. And, you know, it's been fantastic to watch. And I'm not saying the men's tournament hasn't been, but it definitely didn't set the world alight in the same way. And let's get on to the men's event now, because we did have Andre Rublev winning the title. Again, quite an intriguing final. It did go the distance, and that was against Felix Auger-Aliassime, who is not a player we've seen at the latter stages of any tournament for a long time. And it was 4-6, 7-5, 7-5, with Rublev getting the job done. And that's his second career 1000 title, coming off, you know, a losing streak as well there for Rublev. So he's, you know, delighted to, I'm sure, get this title. Yeah, I would never have predicted this final at the start of the week. What happened in the men's draw? We had, you know, Alcaraz losing, Sinner withdrawing, quite a few withdrawals.
Medvedev withdrew,
etc. Yeah, really not the tournament to remember. Let's start with Rublev, though, because, you know, one tournament that he will certainly remember. Joel, how was Andre Rublev's week? And what did you make of his performance, especially in that final over Felix?
Yeah, I mean, you look at that scoreline on paper and you think, oh, was it really entertaining? Was it a thriller? I don't think we got the cleanest tennis that we got, for example, in the final between Świątek and Sabalenka. But certainly for Rublev, it's all about winning. I mean, he went 6 weeks, I think, without a win on the ATP tour. He was struggling for form. So to come here and win his second Masters 1000 title, that in itself is an incredible turnaround. And, you know, the way I watched him progress through this tournament, you know, in the final against Auger-Aliassime, but also in his match against Carlos Alcaraz as well in the quarterfinals, I just felt that he was a little bit more cool, calm and collected. I still think there were some sort of moments where I thought the old Rublev could kind of boil over, but certainly in this tournament, I felt like his temperament was a lot better and he was a lot more able, therefore, to focus on his tennis and ultimately help him get the job done. So for me, that was the difference maker. And I think he should look back on this tournament and think, look, if I stay cooler, particularly in those big moments against those big players, then I can rack up more and more titles of this level and calibre.
And he's going to get chances, especially with the way that players now are looking to peak at the slams. There will be chances, you know, when you don't have necessarily a Novak Djokovic in the draw, or some players might not be fit, as we've talked about. And it's important that when there are those opportunities that you're able to take them as a player like Rublev, who's just on the edge of having, I think, what would be a really big breakthrough. And we've seen this a lot on the WTA tour, where it could just be one grand slam where, if you put yourself in contention, you keep a level head, anything can happen. But do you think, I was going to ask, his temperament being slightly improved in this sense, do you think it's because he's been so unwell that he's reduced the expectations he has on the court? Because, I mean, I was reading some of this, that he was only able to eat baby food because he was so sick that his throat was bad. He was very swollen. He had to get an injection. He was taking pain medicine. He said he was dosed up.
He went to the hospital, I think, after the final. Like, that's how bad it was.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, I mean, it reminds me of when Serena was really sick when she won the French Open. I think it was 2015 against Lucy Safarova, and she was very unwell the whole start of that season. So, I mean, unbelievable achievement. But do you think that meant that he was able to not put so much pressure on himself?
I think so. I think, you know, fighting all that, you kind of, I mean, it's amazing that he carried
on. He could stand.
In the tournament and that he managed to win it. I mean, I think that's remarkable. And I guess it puts things into perspective, because if you feel that unwell and you're struggling, you just kind of want to feel better, don't you? You're probably not necessarily thinking, oh, I might potentially walk away with a Masters trophy. And maybe, you know, getting aggravated about a ball decision doesn't seem quite as important in that particular moment. So I think hopefully he'll take that as a lesson moving forwards.
And I think also it just shows the athlete and the desire that we all know exists in Andrei Rublev, because, you know, the way he was speaking about what he was carrying going into that final, the fact that he had to have also, I think, an injection into his foot in order to play, I think it just shows that his desire to play. And, you know, there might be other players to be like, actually, I want to take care of myself. There's a lot of big tournaments coming up. I'm not going to risk myself in this final. But actually, I think it just shows his burning desire and character. And it's just like, I want to go out there, do my best, regardless of my physical condition, and, you know, see where it takes me.
A bit of a Rafa thing, you know, when he had to have the injection on the year in 2022.
To win the French.
Yeah. Battled through it. And I think, obviously, we talk about wanting to make sure that you're healthy. It's very important. But at the same time, if an opportunity presents itself like this to get another Masters and not be a single Masters champion, he obviously pushed through. And maybe at times we say that people's desire to win can get in the way, but it almost felt like the desire to win was what got him through. And probably he's probably lying down somewhere right now, but he got the title.
Yeah. And I mean, it will be interesting to see if he does play Rome. But I mean, injuries and withdrawals have just been a massive talking point throughout the week. And it's quite interesting you talk about that, because Carlos Alcaraz, for example, I get the impression he wasn't 100%, you know, coming into this tournament, but they took the decision to play. But arguably, the more and more that tournament went on, it just didn't feel like maybe the right one. You know, he had the Milos Raonic sleeve going on his arm, and, you know, he's already not playing Rome. So it's a really... it's a really delicate balancing act, I feel, where it could go right in like a Rublev situation, but there's also the other way it could go. And I feel like maybe Carlos Alcaraz is in that spot at the moment.
Yeah, because he pulled out of Monte Carlo and Barcelona. Now he's pulled out of Rome. So, you know, he struggled through, had a few matches here, but he's still suffering from that right arm injury. And, you know, going into the French, that's not a great deal of prep. And you're feeling, you know, quite rusty and partially injured, so not looking good for him. Yannick Sinner was also forced to withdraw from his quarter against Felix Auger-Aliassime with a hip injury. He's pulled out of Rome as well. So a whole host of things going around at the moment, and, you know, Medvedev retiring as well, Yuri Lehechka. What's causing, you know, I mean, so there's always injuries, but we do sometimes see clusters of them with a lot of withdrawals and retirements all in one short space of time. Is there anything causing this? The court surface, is something different about the court this year in Madrid? Or
I think for some of these players, it's the first time they're playing on clay in matches. And for Alcaraz, I think probably he knew that he wasn't in peak fitness coming in here, but if you are really stretched like he was against Struve, then that will mean that likely, and the Rublev match, that you have got the practice that you might need, you know where your body is at, and you know that you probably don't need to play next week. I think with Medvedev retiring, I think he really didn't necessarily want to be here particularly.
He's keeping Klavadev on hold for Rome.
I think maybe he is, but I do think the body does need time to adjust to the physicality of clay. And it did feel like in Madrid this time, we were getting longer points again and longer matches in a way that the big servers tended to dominate previously, but that wasn't the case here. So maybe there is something a little bit different in the conditions. But I mean, last year it was Rome, this year it's Madrid with the withdrawals. So hopefully everyone who does start in Rome will have a good go at making it to the end.
And it was interesting actually to hear Ivan Ljubicic talk about the fact that we've got three big tournaments coming up because of the Olympics, Roland Garros obviously, and Wimbledon. And maybe because of the Olympics, there is a slight extra precaution being taken by players like Yannick Sinner, which felt more in the precautionary camp than anything, that there's bigger things down the line than, you know, than Madrid. So maybe that's a little bit of a factor as well.
Well, one player who benefited from some of those withdrawals and retirements was certainly Felix Auger-Aliassime.
He benefited from all of them.
Yeah, he had a walkover, two retirements, and you've got to think that did help him on his way to the final because, you know, he hasn't had the best of seasons. I think that's fair to say. I mean, he did a good job in the final. We came close to winning it. But do you think that was more luck, him getting there, or did we genuinely see, you know, him have a bit of a turnaround this week? What did you think overall about his performance on the court?
I think you never know when your luck's going to change. And I think that's a case where he definitely felt that last year when he actually won the title in Bâle, which kind of came out of the blue last year when he won the 500 and he hadn't had much form. So I think he's aware as a player that you do have luck that ebbs and flows. And sometimes, you know, you're out of luck for a bit and it can come back around. So it feels like that's very much the case for him here. He has been putting together a few more good results. He's got a couple of good wins here and there, but it really hasn't been the season that we thought it would be based on the result he had at the end of last season. So definitely benefiting from some of the draw, you know, a couple of withdrawals that have really, quite a few withdrawals that have taken him through. You know, everyone seemed to see him on the draw sheet and run away, except Casper Ruud. So that's the one I would probably draw the most attention to, that he got a great win there. But if he had it, we talked about temperament with Sabalenka. I do think he could have got that done in two sets against Rublev. So again,
it was so sad to see it end on a double fault as well.
Oh, I know. It really is sad. And I think what you have to look for is the positives of the ranking points. It will give him more opportunities. It will give him better draws and better chances. But he's never been a player who's taken his chances unbelievably well in the past. So an improvement week, but I'm not sure that I'm going to see him being a significant contender in the rest of the clay swing.
Is there an argument to say that Felix Auger-Aliassime is almost too textbook and too predictable in terms of, you know, when he steps out onto the court? And I think, you know, a lot of people admire his technique and his athleticism, but almost to the point that he goes for the high percentage shot that's in the textbook, like every single time. And as a result of that, it's not going to take him, you know, to the places that potentially a few years ago, you know, we might thought they would. Do you think he needs to have a little bit more unpredictability in his game?
I think that's probably a very good comment, because he's not one of those players that makes the highlights reel particularly much. And I'm not saying that makes you a fantastic player, but you have to take risk in order to get the reward. And I'm not sure the double fault, for example, a match point, was him taking a risk. I do think that was his arm tensing up and getting quite tight. I do think he's a player that kind of lacks that je ne sais quoi, as some of the much more, I guess, more popular in some ways players, because of the way that they play. But at the same time, reliability can get you very far too. Look at like David Ferrer or a player like him. It doesn't get you a grand slam, but it can get you a very long time at the top of the game. So doesn't mean he won't be able to do it, but at the same time, I think you have to take risks.
He needs a little bit of Shapovalov, I feel, flair.
Reckless energy.
Reckless energy.
One out the stadium, one backhand winner down the line.
He needs a KPI for his season that he gets on like the tennis TV hot shots of the week.
Yeah. Number of hot shots secured.
I mean, we've had, you know, Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Madrid, three tournaments, three different champions. Is this leading to perhaps the most open French Open draw we've had in a long time?
Yes.
Not the French Close, then the French Open for sure.
I just think it's so open at this moment. It's just screaming for someone to come in and seize that moment, that opportunity. And you even think like with like Rafael Nadal and even Novak Djokovic, the fact that they're not at the peak of their powers, it feels, at this moment. You know, they've had to go through the ringer a lot more, I feel, in previous years to win the French Open, and it feels like this year those players, they could probably operate at maybe 70-80%, you know, of their peak ability, and, you know, potentially get the job done. That's what it feels like to me, and that's what I think so tantalizing, the fact that with Rafa he improved, I think, in Madrid, and it feels like there's an upward trajectory there of progression, and he is looking to peak at Roland Garros.
every Djokovic match as well. I think what makes it so exciting now is that we haven't got the predictability that we have had previously, where you almost don't want to tune in to some of the early rounds on the men's side or the women's side. In fact, to be honest, early rounds aren't always that entertaining. Whereas now I think we have players of all different ranking that can cause lots of problems. I mean, look at kind of some of the losses that Djokovic has had this year, complete surprises. So I think there are a lot of contenders who are there, but I also think that draws can be absolutely shattered and smashed apart, like we've seen in Madrid, and you know, you can have a surprise finalist. So I think Casper Ruud would like to see someone who maybe has a few less Grand Slams in a final in Paris, if he could get to that stage. Because, I mean, it's always been dominated by such kind of experienced players.
Yeah, and Rafa getting to the quarterfinal in Madrid, losing to Lehechka in straight sets. But I think, like you said, Joel, that was definitely an improvement.
You've got to be happy, Kim.
What we've seen so far. Yeah, absolutely. And there was a nice little ceremony afterwards as well. A big thank you from the Madrid tournament for his many years playing there.
Was it too early, though, I was going to say? Because it feels a bit like the retirement montage at the Australian Open for Andy Murray. But he hasn't said he's definitely not coming back. So is it in case he doesn't? I was a bit confused.
Yeah, I mean, I was just kind of going on the assumption that he is unlikely he'd be back. But yeah, I know there hasn't been an official, like, this is definitely my last one. But I suppose they can always do it again next year, can't they? I mean, Andy Murray's had how many retirement ceremonies now? Yeah. I don't know.
I feel like Pedro Cachin definitely thought it was his final Madrid, because he went over to specifically do the shirt swap as they do in football. And it was something I wanted to ask you both. What's your view on shirt swaps in tennis? Is this going to become like more of a thing? Like, should Rafa almost have like the name of the event and the final on the shirt, so that, I don't know, it could potentially be shirt swapped or auctioned in the future? It just felt something to me that I've not seen much before, and is very much in the football world and not something we've really seen in tennis.
It's divided Twitter, hasn't it? I think a lot of people don't see a problem with it at all. I mean, I personally don't really see a problem with it. The only time when I do think I have a bit of an issue with kind of the, when it becomes fandom rather than kind of respect, you know. And I think that Seb Korda probably has lost matches to Rafael Nadal because of how much of a fan he is. He's his biggest fan. Whereas I think for Eugenie Bouchard, when she played against Maria Sharapova, it gave her more of a desire to try and get the win. So if you channel it in the right way and you've competed at your highest level, then why not? I think that's a nice memento from the match and what was a big moment in your career. So I think there's nothing wrong with it. I think if he was going to get kind of a line of shirts done and then people could queue up for them afterwards, I think most players would take them, because there's so much respect for, you know, the legends of the game like Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to become a prolific thing. It's sort of a very in particular situation. And also, apologies, it was the fourth round, not the quarterfinal. Here's me making out that Rafa's got to the quarters. It wasn't.
I thought
wasn't
he won the tournament. He won it, no?
That's
that
as ceremony. Good as.
That was
as
the trophy
good
ceremony.
As. And let's take a very short break now, but we'll be back in the second half to discuss the Billie Jean King Cup finals draw for Seville, the news that Tsitsipas are sadly no more, and we'll also be looking ahead to the Rome Masters, so do not go anywhere.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly Podcast. And now we're going to move on to a bit of a quiz segment. We've got a back and forth path of the courts that Chris has got, I believe, for us and our listeners. So over to you, Chris.
Yes, indeed. I figured we probably played a bit too much of Joel's game and we're getting a bit good at it. Because Molly and I, we had a very good performance last week, making it to the final round. And I think it's time to mix it up and put the challenge back on, because Joel, you're back in the hot seat, and Kim, you're back on the podcast. So the competition should be fierce in both of you.
I think Molly did so well last week. I think she might have outdone me. I think maybe I'll be turfed off. She'll be coming on for to win the quiz segments in future.
Maybe we'll have to, yeah, if Joel might need the help when he does some of the Joel's games.
Maybe we need Kim versus Molly.
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm not sure how that would go.
I don't know how that would go.
That'd be a Swiatek Sabalenka style.
Yeah, 3 hours later, we're still on the back and forth. Exactly. Well, Joel, I know that one of your favourite things that has ever happened in tennis is blue clay. And I thought, what better but equally horrible way than to test your knowledge on the blue clay event that happened in Madrid. And I'm going to make it a little bit easier than it sounds, because I'm going to ask you if you can name the seeded players from the women's side of the 2012 Madrid Open.
Oh, wow.
So cast your mind back.
How many seeds were there at this event?
There were only 16.
Okay.
I thought 32 would be an awful lot, but I can tell you just a couple of things. It's only fair. Daniela Hantchakova actually withdrew from the tournament, in case you were going to guess her.
Oh,
yes.
And the tournament was only a week long.
Yes, exactly. Before it started, she actually withdrew. And Sabine Lisicki also did withdraw with an ankle injury.
Oh, that was going to be my second answer as well.
Yes, so I was just going to make that clear up
really,
front.
Really, Joel?
No.
But yes, how are we feeling with that?
I actually thought it was in 2009, so I'm glad you clarified the
2012.
Year.
2012.
I don't know why I had 2009 in my mind. Okay, women's top 16-ish from 2012 May kind of time. Okay,
yes.
You're starting, Joel.
I think Joel should start because he is Blue Clay's number one fan.
I'll walk the plank first then. This is really tough. And I'm actually thinking more who played at the London Olympics in the tennis to sort of get there.
None of the slams. Not Wimbledon that year.
I'm going to go...
Just the Olympics.
Yeah, just the Olympics.
I'm going to go...
Every 4 years it gets an update, Kim.
Yeah. I'm going to start with Victoria Azarenka.
Well, she might have been world number one then, maybe.
She was the number one seed, correct.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Did she win the Olympics?
She
got a bronze medal, didn't she?
Yeah, I just remember she played in the mixed doubles final with Max Murnyi.
So you went mixed doubles to help you get the
Madrid
Open women's single seed.
That was the first thing.
That's lateral thinking for you.
I'm not going to put Laura Robson, though, in the top 16 seeds of Madrid by the same
logic. I think you should put Heather Watson, though.
No. So I will go for Serena Williams.
That's a very good guess. She may not be seeded where you thought, but seeded 9.
Okay.
Phew. Ooh, okay.
That's a bit scary.
I'm not gonna lie,
it?
I thought that was not a correct answer.
But you know that she won the Olympics that year, Joel.
Yes. Right.
what are you basing this on?
I don't know. Maria Sharapova?
Okay, we're very much on track. The number two seed.
Did she come second at the Olympics?
Number two
seed. She did come second. That's true. She got the silver medal. This is not about the Olympics. Yes, please stop.
Petra Kvitova?
Oh, that's a good one.
Petra Kvitova.
Who won this tournament, actually?
Petra Kvitova, number three seed.
Oh, wow. We're doing really well on the top seeds. I'm slightly nervous now. I am struggling now. I'm going to say, I don't know if this is right, to be honest. She's still playing on the tour, but we're going to go for it. Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova?
have to tell you, Joel, that is not a seated answer.
No.
That I'm afraid that's slightly curveball considering some of the more obvious players you could have gone for. But Kim, can you secure the win?
I think I might. Agnieszka Radwańska.
Oh, a
very Wimbledon finalist of that year.
Yes, a very easy win for Kim, number four Woo-hoo! Seed.
Oh, I've already got some names that I'm already kicking myself.
Who else would you have gone for, Joel?
Svitolina.
Svitolina would not have got you a point.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Pliskova?
Oh, yeah.
Pliskova would also not have got you a point.
Oh, wow. Jankovic? Was she
Jankovic
still around?
Seeded 17.
Oh, so she wouldn't have been
seeded
in the top...
15 at the time.
Oh, right.
Ranked top 20, 17.
Oh, yeah. Ivanovic?
Ivanovic would also have got your point. Honestly, she could wipe the floor with you, Joel.
Oh. Kuznetsova.
Kuznetsova, that's a very good guess, but not a correct answer at this time. I can tell you that the other names that you didn't get was Sam Stosur was the fifth seed. Wozniacki still playing, number six seed.
Yeah.
Marion Bartoli, seven. Lina, eight. Vonareva was 10. Then we had Schiavone, Kerber, Sabulkova, and Maria Kirilenko were the answers. So a throwback to Blue Clay, but can you tell me who won the title?
I think it was Kvitova.
Joel?
No, I've got no idea.
Who won the Olympics that year?
Oh, Serena. Did Serena win
it? It was Serena.
Oh.
Yeah.
And Federer was. On the men's.
It was Federer on the men's. That's a correct
answer. Oh, so they both won the Olympics, didn't they?
No, Murray won the Olympics.
Oh, no, Andy Murray, sorry.
Goodness, yeah, Murray wiped the floor with him.
In the final.
Sorry, I'm getting the other final.
Any of our listeners, if you've got the answers to the Olympics right, or if you've got the answers to Madrid Blue Clay, please do tell us, because this was not our highest quality performance so far.
Oh dear, we'll get there in the end. Let's go into the mailbag instead. We've got Andy, hopefully not Andy Murray, on email getting in touch with us. And he asked us, hi Tennis Weekly, off the back of the news that the French Open will be having pickleball courts in the grounds as part of their fan experience for this year, do you think that Grand Slams should be embracing new racket sports like pickleball and paddle, or should they just be sticking to tennis? Thanks, Andy. And yeah, this is off the back of the news that Roland Garros will allow fans to get a taste of pickleball. They'll be having it in an area of the grounds for people to have a go at, which is exciting. And they've also put the beach tennis and urban tennis will also be back. What's urban tennis?
I think it's just a smaller, more temporary sort of court, which they sort of makeshift go and have a hit. You know, when you see them at the side of the courts, it's basically encouraging participation, that one, I think.
Oh. Can they have rural tennis as well?
I think that's just tennis.
What do you think about pickleball being available in this way? Any strong opinions?
I mean, it's definitely divisive. I think for a lot of tennis and tennis clubs, there is the threat of paddle actually driving down participation in many ways because it is more accessible. So I think embracing other sports, I think, is positive in many ways because then you might be able to attract people to the sport in that way. There's paddle in Rome. I very much enjoyed seeing that. I thought that was quite fun having that as like a side exhibition. I'm not a big pickleball fan myself. I think I prefer paddle because it's very tennis adjacent, whereas I think pickleball is a little bit different. It feels more like beach ball than it does kind of a professional sport in many ways. So I don't have strong feelings about it. We will both be there, Kim, and I don't think we'll be watching pickleball when we're there.
No, it's not going to be high on my list to make sure I see. But
if Rafa was playing pickleball, would you?
Oh, well, of course. In that case, I think I don't see a problem with them like having it in this way, though, if it's for like fans. I think if it encourages people to get involved in some kind of sport, because they might be put off by conventional tennis, but this might seem
it's very hard to learn
doable.
Tennis. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, if I'm a tennis federation and I own the event, like with, you know, French Open and the French Tennis Federation, then I absolutely see that it makes sense in terms of encouraging participation, opening the sport up and having lots of different like things on the site. I think what's interesting is that Wimbledon is not run, you know, by a tennis federation. It's not run by the LTA. It's run by the All England Lawn Tennis Club. And, you know, for me, I'm kind of like, I don't think that's part of their objective or their goal. And so I think from that point of view, I think they would probably rather just stick to the tennis and almost kind of see these other things as almost like relegated and not part, should not be part of the experience. But I think if you're the governing body and you own the tournament, then yeah, I think it makes sense.
I feel the only sport that Wimbledon could have is croquet, because that's the origins.
Lawn bowls.
Real tennis.
Of All England Lawn Tennis and Croquet Club is its official name. So yeah. But I mean, I was watching Buying Beverly Hills on Netflix the other day. I'm obsessed with those like real estate shows. And they had a pickleball tournament in their back garden, which was quite exciting to watch. And one of the estate agents is the daughter of Bob Lutz. And they referred to him as being a US Open champion. And I was like, who is this person? He used to play doubles with Stan Smith and they did win the US Open.
Oh, wow.
Wow. So a bit of a... mix of my fandoms there, my real estate programs and tennis.
Well, now that Breakpoint's no longer being picked up, why not watch Buying Beverly Hills
instead? Yes. There
for
we
your
go.
Tennis fix.
I think I was
bit
reading
of a plug
bit. I think
for that
we're,
show.
I think we're getting a Stan Smith documentary out quite soon. So maybe that's part of it. But quite interesting.
We're also getting Buying London, a real estate show in London. So watch out for that.
It's going to be Joel looking for a flat.
In Knightsbridge.
Yes.
Oh, definitely.
With that crowdfunder money. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
No, definitely not, listeners. Absolutely
not. Yeah, I've got something to tell you both after the show. No.
Yeah, put a deposit down.
Thank you very much, Andy, for your question there. Listeners, if any of you are at Roland Garros and have a go at pickleball there, let us know how you get on. But on to the talking points for this week, because we've had a couple. We've got the Billie Jean King Cup finals draw, which has been revealed for November out in Sevilla. And we potentially might have another clash between Raducanu and Canada. Raducanu and Leila Fernandez of Canada.
Have to take them all on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just Emma against like the entire nation of Canada, which would be a repeat of the US Open final when Raducanu won. But we have got to get through Germany. It's Germany, Great Britain in the first round because Canada already have a bye. What do you make of this draw? Do you think that's a decent draw for Team GB? Are there any other draws that are catching your eye?
I think there's quite a few good draws, don't you think?
Yeah, I think for GB, I think that's a nice opening tie against Germany. And then I know Canada are top there and are defending champions, but I feel like they were surprise packages last year, so I don't think that is as intimidating as some of the other countries we could have been up against.
And we are, as we've talked about previously, I mean, we're probably better on an indoor hard court than we are a clay court, so I think it will definitely present opportunities. Yeah. We know that Katie Poulter likes the surface and that Germany don't necessarily have the standout players right now, so I think that's a good draw. I think there's also be very interesting to see if we get some of the top talent playing. Will Naomi Osaka be back at this point of the season? The Romania clash could be very interesting if Halep plays as well. So it all depends if we get the top talent there. But when it gets going, then we will know, you know, who will be playing the top four seeds. But initially from a draw, it is strange seeing buys in these draws, I have to say. But there are a couple of good clashes in the mix.
Yeah, Canada, Australia, Czechia and Italy getting the byes. Will Canada be able to defend their title? How will GB get on? We now know the draws. We've just got to wait till November to see them being played out. I'm sure that
get
will come
ready.
Around before you know it. Yeah, start the countdown now.
Yes.
In other news, going away from the tennis court a little bit, and unfortunately we have some shattering news that Paolo Badosa and Stefanos Tsitsipas are no longer an item. Tsitsidosa have chosen to move forward on their own paths. They've announced on social media in a statement, and yeah, they have parted ways. Is this a surprise to either of you, this sad news?
I wasn't particularly surprised. I think it did feel like it was a love that burned very hot, very quickly. And it does make me think that, you know, those sorts of things aren't necessarily always sustainable. They were soulmates last year. And I do think that, you know, it was a whirlwind in many ways. And that maybe, you know, Tsitsipas getting his good result in Monte Carlo might be because things off court might have cleared up a little bit for him. He might have got a little bit more back on the focus. I'm not saying it's a distraction at all. I think having relationship on the tour can be very, very positive. You know, we've seen Katie Balter and Alex de Minaur putting together great results. But I do think that the nature of this was that you do get a lot more attention. You get a lot more press, good and bad. And I think for someone like Badosa, I mean, it's probably the most high profile thing that's happening to her is the relationship with Tsitsipas rather than results on the court, which also can put you in a difficult position when you are a tennis player first and foremost. So looking forward to them very much getting back on the court and focusing on the tennis. And it looks like they're very much not on the best of terms as they both unfollowed each other on Instagram.
Oh, that goes against their statement that said they
amicably
parted ways.
Ooh. But maybe it's an out of sight, out of mind kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, maybe just mute though in that case.
That's what I thought. If you are, you know, very much respectful and evolving away from each other, then maybe don't evolve away from the unfollow button.
I feel like the statement felt like a player like parting ways with a coach.
I don't think I'm not sure she wrote it. It does feel like the agent wrote it.
It doesn't sound like a natural Spanish, Spanish way of speaking, maybe.
And have we heard anything from Tsitsipas, though? I've not seen anything, which makes
me
think...
No, I feel like he's just still tweeting kind of random philosophical thoughts.
About the environment, mainly, right?
Yeah. It's funny, because I feel like that relationship was so public. It was so out there. It was, you know, content... on all their kind of social channels, and yeah, it just felt like it went quiet, particularly over the last few months. And that was the sort of I was looking back and thinking, hang on, when was the last time we actually saw some sort of Sisidosa content? And that sort of got me thinking, like, oh, where's this gone, or where's this going?
Well, I mean, I would say probably some time being single is what's required, so they can focus on their singles play.
Paolo Badosa to win the French Open then?
I mean...
We'll see,
yeah. I mean, not everyone can create a gem's life for themselves.
Oh, I like that touch there, Chris. Very nice. Let's look at Rome now, because we do have the Rome tournament happening over the next 2 weeks. So, yeah.
Is this
going to
feel like another
here?
86 years and counting? Kim, how many walks are you going to be able to do in that time?
Oh, well, 5,000
miles probably, yeah.
This week, I will be a bit distracted because the Eurovision Song Contest is happening, just saying.
Very close to me, Kim, as well, but I won't be there. And I feel very bad that I'm letting you down in that respect.
I know, I said to you, because you're in Copenhagen, I said, oh, are you going to pop over to Malmo then or go to some event? And you said, oh, I'm flying to the UK tomorrow, which is the complete reverse of what we've been talking about,
yes. I should have got you
Eurovision.
Here as well. Yes, indeed, indeed. But I thought only one of us can be very, very into Eurovision. You know, we all have our own interests.
Yes. Real estate, tennis and Eurovision are my three at the moment. There we go. Djokovic is back, though, which is very exciting. He is the number one seed in Rome. Is he just going to turn up and be like, I'm here to show you all how to play tennis on clay? I feel like he's just timing it nicely.
He's got a nice draw, I think, to do that. It doesn't feel that... difficult, I think, because of the high profile people that we've had drop out. We don't even know if Rublev is going to be there as well. So it definitely feels like the platform for him to do that.
I think he's coming in just the right time. I think he might have a bit of a good run here and then peak for the French. But, you know, let's have a look and make some predictions for the men's and women's draws. Let's start with the men. Let's hope there aren't so many unfortunate retirements and withdrawals over the next few weeks, because, you know, I'd love to have a cracking Rome tournament. Rafa's also in the draw. He's got a qualifier first round, possibly Hercash second round, so that will be a tough one. Yeah, right, let's go quarter by quarter then. So quarter one, Joel, kick us off.
Djokovic, Rude.
I've gone for exactly the same.
Same here, guys. We're all in agreement.
Oh, Djokovic rude.
Lovely, yeah.
Quarter two, Joel?
I've gone slightly rogue here. I've gone Navoni versus Fritz. Fritz had a good Madrid, and Navoni has been...
You pick Fritz no matter what.
I do. But Navoni has been doing very, very well on the Challenger circuit recently on the clay. I think he's going to be seeded as well for the French.
Never played a Grand Slam, really? So he'll be playing his first Slam as a seed, which is pretty epic.
I was reading, won all his ranking points on clay. That was in my thinking as well. So I've got Navoni Fritz.
A proper clay court specialist then. I've gone for Griegspor against Fritz, because why not? Chris?
I've gone Navone Musetti. I thought, inspired by the Italian crowd, he will take on Sinner's mantra and they will hope, I mean, the Carotta boys, maybe they'll cheer him on instead.
Absolutely. Quarter three, Joel.
Alex de Minaur versus Nicolas Jarry. I was really struggling with this quarter. So I've gone there. I maybe could have picked Rublev, but I just don't know if he's going to be in the draw. So I kept away.
Yeah, I thought Rublev might have self-combusted a bit. He might be needing that time to recover. I've gone for Tsitsipas against Fee. Bit rogue with Fee, maybe. But he's got a shine at some point. Chris?
So you think Tsitsipas will rebound from the relationship troubles?
Well, I think he'll make his statement on court, yes.
Okay. Oh, that's... Yes, indeed. Not on a story. I went for Alex de Minaur and I went for Umber. I feel like maybe he's going to produce some clay court magic. He's definitely getting better on the surface. So I'm giving him a pick.
So our predictions are varying quite a lot here. Quarter four, Joel.
Oh, it was tempting to pick Rafa, but I just don't think he's going to get past her catch. So I'm going Echeverry versus ADF, Davidovich Fokina.
This is truly wild, Joel.
It's tough. Like, that final section, I think it can be anyone, really.
It's very,
very
easy, no?
I went Nadal Medvedev. Oh, you've gone for Nadal. Excellent.
I went for the Grand Slam champions.
That's true. I went for Sebastian Baez and Francis Tiafoe.
Wow.
Tiafoe?
Well, you know, he might spring
a
surprise.
Fortunes change. Just ask Felix.
Fortunes favour the brave as well. Right, semi-final one. Joel, who is in your... Well, just do both your semis.
I've got Ruud Navoni and Alex de Minaur Echeverry, which again feels quite surprising. But hey, it happened in Madrid. Maybe it's going to happen in Rome.
Oh, I've gone Djokovic, Fritz, Tsitsipas, Baez, and Chris.
I went Djokovic, Musetti, Umber, Medvedev.
I feel like that's more believable than anything I've... And maybe Joel has,
I think,
predicted.
This one sounds like my one could happen with one rogue, you know?
And let's do finals and champs. Joel.
I've got Ruud, Alex de Minaur, and then my champion is Casper Ruud.
You love a form player, don't you, Joel?
I do. And I think he's going to take out Novak Djokovic. That's why I've gone for it.
The conditions will definitely be much more up his street in Rome, that's for sure.
I went for Djokovic against Tsitsipas with Djokovic back to winning titles. And Chris?
I think it's hard to bet against Djokovic, because even when he hasn't had the best lead in, he has ended up doing well in Rome. So I have him winning the title over Medvedev.
So we've got two Djokovic's and a Casper Ruud to round off our predictions there. Very nice. Still sticking with, you know, top names, not any rogue champions like an Echeverry or a Navoni, but stranger things have happened. Let's look at the women's draw now, because we've got Iga Świątek, of course, as the top seed and Aryna Sabalenka as the second seed. Will it be a repeat of the Madrid final? Let's see. Chris, let's go for your quarter one prediction, please.
I've gone for a repeat of a match that happened last week. I've gone for Haddad Maia and Iga Świątek.
Oh, Joel?
I've gone the same. Haddad Maia, Świątek.
Oh, I've gone for Świątek against Serena Castella. I didn't want to predict that they're the same as you guys. Chris, quarter two?
I went for Goff Kasatkina.
Joel?
I've gone Mira Andreeva versus Kasatkina.
I've gone for Navarro against Kostic.
Wow.
I'm slightly regretting now. But
no, that could be a good prediction. Marta's having a great season.
Come on, girls, prove me wrong. prove them wrong. Prove me right, even. Chris, quarter three.
Zachary Rybakina.
Joel?
Azarenka Collins.
Oh, I've gone Azarenka Rybakina, so a bit of both. And quarter four, Chris.
Jabir Sabalenka.
Oh, I've gone for the same, actually. Joel?
Yep, it's clean, a clean sweep. Jabir Sabalenka.
Nice. And right, semis. So, Chris, who are in your semis?
Świątek Kasatkina.
And
my other one, sorry, there's two semis. Rybakina Jabir. I think there'll be an upset.
Oh, okay. Joel?
I've gone Świątek Ondrejewa and Danielle Collins versus Aryna Sabalenka. I feel like I've just said that because I want it to happen again, because
it was
up until the final, yeah, it was one of the matches of the fortnight in Madrid.
Yeah, that would be fun. I think Ondrejewa in the semi would also be fantastic if it happens. I've gone for Świątek Navarro, Rybakina, Sabalenka. So Emma Navarro is my rogue.
She was playing a 1-2-5 last week and she pulled out of that. So maybe she got the prep she needed for Rome.
It's all swings and roundabouts with Emma Navarro. And finals and champions, Chris?
Final, I went for Świątek Rybakina, and then my winner was Emma Raducanu.
Yes, because we have spoken about that prediction you made before Madrid, have we?
Molly laughed in my face last week, so I think I've suffered enough, but I thought I had to bring it up again that I'm not going rogue, I'm going Świątek.
Well, you do hold the current slam spoon.
I think they've never left me. I think I've had them since they've been invented.
So you're very firmly going for Świątek as your champion this time round. I've gone for the same. I think it's going to be a Świątek Rybakina final as well, with Świątek winning. Joel?
I've got a repeat of Madrid. Świątek Sabalenka. And I've got a repeat champion. I've got Świątek winning and Sabalenka runner-up.
So we've gone for a clean sweep of Iga Świątek to win the Rome Masters. Well, that would set her up very nicely.
Yeah.
Indeed.
We'd all get along much better.
I always go for Świątek and Djokovic, but it is hard to bet against them, especially at the moment, with Świątek in particular. But yeah, fantastic. Well, we will be back next week to catch up on what we've seen in Rome so far. Let's hope that we get lots of exciting tennis to captivate our week in the meantime, before we are back next week with another latest catch up.
I know, lots of exciting, hopefully exciting tennis to come in Rome. But listeners, we're going to end it there for our latest tour catch up. Make sure to check out our Challengers film review, which is out now on YouTube as well as all major podcasting platforms. If you wish to see my beautiful mustache on video, it is on YouTube. And it's a well worth a watch if you haven't already.
Or if you've been to see Challengers and would like to hear an intellectual and stimulating discussion.
Exactly that as well. I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action from the ATP and WTA tours.
We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. So if you like what you're hearing, then do make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us on social media or email the show. We're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and X. And the handle for all of those is Tennis Weekly Pod. You can purchase our Tennis Weekly merch. We're down to the last few caps, so get them whilst we still have them. That's at etsy.com/shop/tennisweeklypodcast. You can email us at tennisweeklypod@gmail.com or do check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back next week at Tennis Weekly HQ, so I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.